Thanks for listening to On Biz Tech, conversations and tips from leading experts in business and technology. For more information, visit informit.com/podcasts and subscribe today.
Hello, my name is Catherine Bull, and I am Senior Acquisitions Editor at Pearson Education, and I am responsible for the IBM Press Alliance, which is an alliance between Pearson Education and IBM to produce thought-provoking thought leadership books on products and business issues. Today I have Bob Laird, who is an IT architect within the IBM software group, and Bob joined the Enterprise Integration Solutions group 2 years ago after 20 years of experience in the industry at MCI, and he is responsible for supporting and leading the service-oriented architecture governance and architecture engagements for IBM customers worldwide. He has written a book called Executing SOA with three other authors, Norbert Bieberstein, Tilak Mitra, and Keith Jones. And I'm pleased to have you here today, Bob.
Thanks. Thanks, Catherine.
Legacy applications are sometimes described as monoliths, big blocks of code that are hard to maintain and use for SOA. How should an SOA architect make these monoliths reusable?
Yeah, these so-called monoliths, which is a term that's used to refer to legacy applications, is a big problem for many IT shops. They have a set of code that many times is difficult to maintain, or the people that have originally coded it and really understood it have long since left or retired. And now they're trying to add IT agility and business agility, and there's been a lot of investment in creating this functionality. It's good functionality. It's just hard to understand and maintain. One of the things that I do is, first of all, there's a misperception in the marketplace that SOA is about ripping and replacing and completely replacing that legacy code with services. And that is completely untrue. In fact, SOA is largely about, from an IT point of view, how you can create reuse within that legacy code and refactor it into something that is really something that you can work with. So one of the first things I like is let's take a look at the legacy. By all means, from an enterprise architecture point of view, I like to map it to what are the business functions and get some understanding there. A lot of times you'll find that there's multiple applications that are doing the same thing, so there's obvious room for optimization there. But within any particular legacy, I do like to try and understand is there any business value from this legacy, or is this something that is a low priority as opposed to high priority business area? So if it's low priority and it's not adding value and it's really hard to understand, then we kind of bypass that. Let's not consider that any further. If it's something that's difficult to change but it does have value to the business, then perhaps what we want to do is treat it as a black box and look at what we call in SOA wrapping it, putting a web services interface, if you will, around it, and figuring out the functionality that we want to use there, and then just use that as the web services interface that we can access that functionality. The third type of legacy is, you know, there is a good possibility that we can actually componentize that legacy application, that monolith. And if in addition it's in something that has high business value, then that is a candidate for actually doing something a little bit more detailed with. So that brings us to this more interesting example then of where you have this monolith legacy application and you want to try to componentize it and maybe break it up a little bit into more readily reusable services. So when you look at that monolith, there's actually there's some sort of user interface that you're dealing with within that monolith. If it's having any interface with your consumers, if it's not, then you don't have that user interface, but let's assume you do. There's some sort of system interface, so there's an application programming interface that's being used to get access to that legacy application. There's some sort of workflow. We're starting at the beginning and we're marching through and getting to the end and exiting from that monolith. And then there's some sort of functionality in there. It's doing something presumably that's useful, otherwise you wouldn't be considering it. And there is some sort of information access that it's dealing with. perhaps a database, perhaps localized data. And so you really need to try to understand what each of those aspects are of the monolith and try and figure out which parts make sense to move. Let's assume for a second, just for the sake of this example, that you do want to move all of those. So that user interface in an SOA environment would tend to go into a portal framework. And one of the things you're doing is trying to get separation of concerns. So in other words, you're not having everything built in this one monolith. You're separating those concerns, if you will, into the right places for them to go. That systems interface would then be your service interface. So we talked before about putting a web services wrapper around a legacy program. So in this case, you're able to be a little bit more intelligent and try to identify the schema that ties into your messaging model, and you actually create that service interface that will be your front to that functionality. The functionality you're probably going to be able to move as is. The one exception to that is if you have business rules, business capabilities built into that functionality, you want to separate that out and put that into your process layer. That workflow layer is something that if you're dealing with separate business functions in that workflow, you can also put that in your process automation. Otherwise, the kind of more IT programmatic logic you would want to leave in the function. And finally, the information access that may be an opportunity for you to at least create an information service, so you're creating some degree of separation for that information, and so you have a separate service interface with wherever you need to do that information access from. So by looking at your monolithic legacy application and identifying what you can do and what makes sense to do, you may not necessarily do all of those things, but to the degree that you can separate out as much as you can from that monolith legacy, you've helped create reuse and agility from that legacy application.
So I've heard about this information services in an SOA. What is it, and how does its usage add value for IT and the business?
You know, information is kind of like the red-headed stepchild within both IT and the business. It's usually left to the junior programmer who has to figure out how to interface from one point in his application program to another point in somebody else's application program. And so they have to do all of these twisting around and format changes and so forth. And that creates a lot of non-agility in your applications as a result of that. So the idea with the information service is let's separate out any time we have to access our information. Let's put that in a separate service. And then as we need to, therefore, make changes within that particular database or information schema or so forth, we're hiding the details of that change, and it's only in one area as opposed in 100 or 1,000 different legacy applications. So it's a very simple concept, but it delivers tremendous agility to both from both an IT and a business point of view. There are several ways you can actually think about creating information services. One is from a data federation point of view. If you want to create a more coarse-grained information service, it would be something that would actually access for you from many different legacy databases, but it's providing you with a single type of information capability, if you will. So that concept is known as data federation, taking many and providing a single view, if you will. Another is data consolidation, where you have perhaps many different information databases that are doing the same thing. So how do you try and consolidate that information? And so the concept of data consolidation pattern within information services is another key one. Kind of the brother to that is the concept of data cleansing, where you actually, as you are consolidating, you also try and make sure that you're making the data better, and the information service actually provides better cleansed data. So we've all seen the example where you have, say, a bad name or a bad address, but it's correct somewhere else. So you validate which one is correct, and then you have cleaned the data as a result of that. It saves a lot of time and effort, both from a IT point of view and from an operational and data center point of view. The final pattern, if you will, is something called master data management. And so in that case, you're taking a collection of enterprise-wide information. you're kind of doing some combination of all of the things I just talked about, federation and consolidation and cleansing, and you're putting it in an area, perhaps a business intelligence BI area, that is then accessible to all of your IT and business needs.
One of the issues today for corporations is security, and you know, SOA supports a more distributed architecture, thereby impacting security. How does SOA governance, which you talked about in a previous podcast, need to address this issue?
Well, first of all, with respect to security, one of the things that is changing as a result of taking a more services approach, and therefore a lot of times a more distributed architectural approach, is that you're not sitting safely within the firewall. You're now dealing with perhaps business to business and sending messages and using services to cross the firewall. And so from a security point of view, you really have to think about that, and you have to think about how you're going to create security within that type of transaction. So the concept of message-level security, whether you're using the WS security protocols that provide security from a user ID and authorization point of view, or whether you're passing some sort of certificate back and forth between the sender and the receiver, or you're using something like a virtual private network, a VPN, to provide security between yourself and another specific business in this case. In any case, one of the things that SOA governance needs to do is, as part of the service development lifecycle, it needs to make sure that those types of, in this case, security concerns and security policies and standards are being understood by the development teams and are being enforced, so that you're taking care of security up front and doing the right thing for security instead of waiting for an event to occur in production when it's too late, and at that point you've embarrassed the company and probably cost the company a lot of money.
You have a new book that's going to be coming out in 2009 on SOA governance, and you've teamed up with one of your authors on executing SOA, Tilak Mitra, and have also teamed up with Clive Gee and Bill Brown. What is that book about, and why did you choose to focus on the governance aspect of SOA?
Pretty much every customer that we went in and talked to about SOA was also asking us about SOA governance. There's been a lot of, especially a lot of analysis by people like Gartner and so forth, in which they said your SOA projects will fail, especially as you start going cross line of business and get more enterprise, if you don't have some level of SOA governance. And certainly there have been a lot of books. There are a lot of books out there that will have a chapter on SOA governance. Our book that we're talking about today does. But what I noticed and what I noticed in looking at some of the things that other organizations have done is there was a lot of material about what to do with respect to SOA governance and not really a whole lot about how to do it. So being a good enterprise architect, I like to break things down into patterns and how you do things and how you go from step one to step two to step three. So we thought it was about time to get much more scientific about how one approaches SOA governance, and myself and my colleagues decided it was time to put our heads together and do something that would really help in the marketplace and help our colleagues who are having to wrestle with this very difficult area of SOA governance.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing that book, and that's also coming out from IBM Press. Bob, thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate you spending some time with us telling people about SOA.
Thanks for listening to On Biz Tech, conversations and tips from leading experts in business and technology. For more information, visit informit.com/podcasts and subscribe today.